the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Another nice looking, a little bit warmer day, but I mean, still, for this time of year, it is it's still very pleasant. So welcome in, everybody. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls. That is the regular crew here in the studio. Yes, Tuesdays we check in with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, and Drew is efforting him right now. Andy Burcham, we will check in with him after the Tigers' big win in Waco, where Dan was. If you weren't with us yesterday, yes, we had a Labor Day show, had a fun show yesterday. But if you weren't with us yesterday, we'd love to hear your thoughts on that ball game, how you feel about the Tigers right now. Auburn bubbling under the top 25 in the AP, receiving the 27th most votes. You have a new number one team, as Ohio State indeed does jump to the number one spot after knocking off Texas this past week. And Dan, as we were speculating yesterday, it was Ohio State, Penn State, LSU 1-2-3.
Yeah, and I thought LSU, maybe because of who they played and where that game was located, could have made the argument to put themselves closer to the number one spot. LSU does get 3 number one votes in the AP poll and 1 number one vote in the coaches poll. Georgia also got a number one vote in the coaches poll this week. And so we were pretty much right on as far as who was going to be in the top 5. We forgot about Oregon.
So we
were both wrong in thinking Texas.
Thought Texas would hang around 5.
Yeah.
They dropped to 7.
They dropped below both Oregon and in the AP poll, they're behind Miami, who the new number 5 team in the country. And I suppose with the team Miami beat in week 1, expected to be pretty good. You know, if you feel comfortable about Miami, you know, where they are. A lot of it's for show. We were curious to see what was going to happen with Florida State. We were curious what was going to happen with Alabama.
And I underestimated. I said I would put Florida State ahead of Alabama. I did not expect to see Florida State jump in at 14 and Alabama drop all the way to 21.
Remarkable, yeah. And in the coaches poll, it's a little bit closer with FSU 19, Alabama 20.
Yeah, well, the coach, you know, coaches poll.
I know.
Did they realize that Auburn even played? Did you notice? Auburn lost 9 points.
Yeah.
In the coaches poll.
Yeah. So
after beating Baylor.
Yeah. Not a ton of movement there in the coaches poll for Auburn. But it's still early enough.
Early.
You know,
and there's plenty of time. There's going to be a whole lot more movement.
And we're not in an era where it's urgent.
It's not critical.
Well, yeah. You know what? There was an era for you kids out there. There was an era where it was really important if you were 1 or 2. In the regular season,
yeah,
in the coaches poll, in the AP poll, and the BCS.
Ask Auburn's unbeaten 2004 team. All right, so we'll get more into that as I mentioned, though. Tuesdays early on, we're pleased to be joined by the voice of the Auburn Tigers, the 1-0 Auburn Tigers, and that is, of course, our friend Andy Burcham. Andy, how are you doing today?
Doing very well, Bill. Looking forward to being at home for the next couple weekends.
Absolutely.
And get ready for this Ball State game on Saturday night after a very successful trip to Waco, Texas.
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone who went out there said they really enjoyed it and were really glad to get out of that heat and get back here to the much milder climes of Auburn.
Bill, I offered a prediction to Andy when I was walking around Waco on Friday that I think ended up being pretty accurate. I just noticed going to lunch near campus and exploring the Dr. Pepper Museum before the game, I was seeing a lot of orange and blue everywhere I was going in Waco, and I thought it's going to be a little bit more than I don't know how many tickets were allotted. And
There were some people thinking that there may not even be 1,500 Auburn folks there, and I thought that sounded crazy.
Quite a few witnesses in the crowd at McLean Stadium, including Bruce Pearl, ironically
enough. Yeah, how about that, in the upper deck?
I would say of the 46, 47,000 that place seats, gosh, I think there was probably 8,000 to 10,000 Auburn fans. Maybe I'm overestimating that a little bit, but from where I was sitting in the press box, I mean, you looked in the upper deck, and from the north end zone all the way around to the Auburn band, that was almost completely Auburn fans. And you're right, Dan. I mean, just seeing around town in the restaurants and hotels and such, there was a huge, huge Auburn presence for that game. And it was remarkably quiet during the day on Friday around town. I was surprised how little activity there was around town. Now, granted, I mean, folks were still working on a Friday, right, and it was a great crowd on hand, but Auburn, I thought, was incredibly well represented down in Waco, Texas.
And, you know, what an impressive win for Auburn. Baylor gets the ball and goes right down the field, and then they hold Auburn to a three and out. By the way, Auburn's only three and out of the ball game, and then move it back down. And it looks like, oh, this is not the way you want to get things started. But from that point on, Auburn took control and didn't let go.
Baylor led 3-0, and then when Auburn went on its drive to take the lead 7-3, the Tigers never trailed after that. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the second half, it was really a game between whether Auburn was leading by 14 points or 7. And it went back and forth most of the second half in that. And it became evident early that Auburn's run game was going to carry the Tigers because the pass game wasn't really there. And Auburn was running the football as it would have wanted to, whether it was Jackson Arnold, who finished with 137 yards and 2 touchdowns, or whether it was Damari Alston, who finished with 84 yards and a touchdown, or Jeremiah Cobb, who finished with 74 yards and a touchdown. 322 yards rushing for Auburn on opening night on the road against the Power Four school. And while some folks may not be impressed with that Auburn win, I was. Considering the pressure I thought that Auburn was under going in and how important that game was for Auburn from a confidence standpoint, from a momentum standpoint. And I thought Auburn was able to go into a very hot atmosphere. Hugh Freeze last night on Tiger Talk over on Wings 94.3 said that the temperature on the field when they got there was 140, which is hard to imagine.
Yeah,
and,
no kidding.
And I thought Auburn performed amazingly well considering that heat. And you can simulate heat, and we know how hot it gets in Auburn through the summer months, but that was really stifling heat that Auburn performed very, very well in on Friday night.
Well, one of the questions that folks had or concerns for the last few years has been the offensive line, and Hugh Freeze said it. I felt it sure looked that way too. That was one of the best performances we've seen from an Auburn offensive line in quite a while. They dominated, and really they controlled both sides as far as the line of scrimmage.
Well, it wasn't just the starters on that offensive line. You have to add Tutal Miller into mm-hmm. that group as well, who has been a starter for Auburn for 2 straight years coming into this one. And I think he played both of the guard spots in that game on Saturday. And he was in there in Auburn's game-winning drive when the Tigers were just pushing the ball down the field. And, of course, it ended up on 4th-and-1 in the 27-yard run by Jackson Arnold that basically clinched the game for Auburn. I just thought that Chaplin and Wade and Lou, Wright, Murphy, and Tutal were the difference in the game on Saturday. They set the tone for Auburn up front. And you know what, guys? That has to continue, I think, for this Auburn. That can't be a one-off for this Auburn team. But I liked what I saw from the defensive front. We know what you get with Kelrick Falk. Kieran Crawford really had a career night. 7 tackles, a tackle for loss, and a sack. It was good to see Amaris Williams, after going off the field, come back in mm-hmm. and play. for the Tigers. I thought Chris Murray had a good game for Auburn. Jared Smith got into some action as well. And then those middle guys, I thought, really did a good job up front of containing potentially a very good running attack for the Baylor Bears. So I thought Auburn's front four were very effective defensively. And then the six plus five plus the six with Tutal Miller, really good up front for Auburn offensively as well.
Andy, we talked about the potential for balance on this Auburn offense. And while, yeah, I mean, things seem skewed when Auburn throws for 108 yards and runs for 307, I still think the receivers and the passing game are vitally important to that performance on Friday night, because Baylor respected that passing game all night, and it kept them from overplaying a run game that was eating them up slowly but surely.
Well, they respected Auburn's pass game so much that the times we saw Eric Singleton go in motion on a possible jet sweep, they went with him, including fourth down and one. Hugh Freeze told us last night on Tiger Talk that initially he thought it was fourth and inches, and Auburn would just, you know, give the quarterback sneak and get the first down and keep it going. And then when they got to the line of scrimmage, he realized that it was much more than just inches, and that's why Auburn called the timeout. And it wasn't just that time, but certainly in that, if you watch the breakdown from the TV perspective, when Singleton goes in motion, everybody goes with him. And Jackson Arnold went 27 yards and was never touched on that game-winning drive. But think about on that drive alone. Think about the two plays that Horatio Fields had. One was a screen pass that he did not block well. But on the next play on third down, he got a very tough catch for, 8 or 9 yards and fought his way to the first down and kept that drive alive that ended up being the game winner or the clincher for Auburn. The pass to Cam Coleman for 23 yards sets up a field goal for the Tigers. Singleton ended up with three catches. He didn't have one, I don't think, till the second half, but kept his string alive of a catch in every game that he has played, now 25 games. Brandon Frazier had two catches in the ball game for the Tigers at the tight end spot. But he had a really good game in both aspects of his game. And in talking with him today, we now have a name for when Frazier, Howard, and Tate Johnson are in the game. Ben Angamunga, the Auburn tight ends coach, calls that the PB&J set.
PB&J, I like that.
And they were in on more than one occasion when Auburn needed some tough yards.
Tate played about
PB&J is when Frazier, Howard, and Johnson are in the ball game right now.
Yeah, Tate played about 15 snaps, and I guess you know what, Preston, Brandon, Johnson, right? That gets you PB.
Yeah, that's right,
Preston, Brandon.
There you go.
Preston, Brandon, and Johnson gets you PB&J. I don't want to get greedy. I want him to throw to Tate Johnson so bad. I want a, you know, whether it's the old Lutzenkirchen, right, the old drag or something you can do to overload. I want a.
Well, maybe in the next couple of weeks.
I guarantee you that Tate wants someone to throw to him as well. You're not the only one.
No, I thought. I thought they played really well, and then of course you had Rayshon Pleasant's kickoff return, which again,
was that electric?
Yeah, no kidding. It's like, and you could see the reaction when he fair caught the first one. It's like, what are you doing? That's not what you're back there for. And everybody, I mean, I think everybody watching was wondering.
Apparently, he was told to. I tried to get a clarification with the head coach, and apparently, he was told to on that point. And then after that, they kind of let him go. And boy, I'm glad he did.
Yeah, no
kidding. He went 98 yards untouched. Untouched 98 yards. So not only did he run it well, that was blocked well by Auburn as well in that special teams unit. And that was an enormous part of the game because Baylor had driven and got within one, and one play later, Auburn takes the lead back to two touchdowns.
Yeah, and I saw that Rayshon was listed by one of the college football analytics listings as one of the the fastest runs, reaching nearly 21 miles an hour on that kick return.
Well, I mentioned it in the broadcast. It was eerily similar to the route that Chris Davis took.
It was
in the kick six, just a little bit shorter, but down that sideline, and he had an escort and Malcolm Simmons with him. And you were just hoping that he didn't get in the way.
Yeah, it's like, Malcolm, move over a little. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, heads up play by the Baylor special teams guy, who realized he's not going to catch Pleasant, but maybe he can push Malcolm
into Rayshon.
Into Pleasant and push. Right. And it nearly worked, were it not for the awareness there of Malcolm. And yeah, I mean, just the eagerness to celebrate with his teammate. And Andy, in the stadium, tough to describe the way, like I was, the way I described it talking to Nathan King was, Auburn wanted a drive, and if you're rooting for Auburn, you probably wanted a drive that was going to slowly let the air out of the balloon. Yeah. Instead, Pleasant just took, you know, a straight razor and popped that thing.
Well, it's one of the reasons that he's at Auburn. Mm-hmm. Not only to play in the secondary, he's going to play plenty for Auburn at corner. But you know, that dual threat cornerback and outstanding kickoff returner. I'm not sure any of us thought that we would see it as quickly as we did, but that was an enormous part of that game from a momentum standpoint, because Auburn did not get any points on its first drive of the second half, and Baylor was able to and get within one score, and then, you know, Rayshon takes the ball at the two and goes 98 yards. It was terrific.
Now Auburn returns home, as you said, for the next couple of ball games, and this is a great situation because there are quite a few things that Hugh Freeze, DJ Durkin, the coaching staff feel like they need to clean up. But it's a whole lot better situation to be doing that. Absolutely. Coming off a win.
Yeah, you're gonna try and win. You want to win. You've got to win against Ball State and South Alabama. You also have to get better. Because on the other side of those two games coming up, you've got Oklahoma and Texas A&M and back-to-back-to-back-to-back SEC games until you get to mid-November. And offensively, I think you want to see a little more balance out of the offense. And I think Auburn will try and take advantage of that. And I think we'll see more of the Auburn running or passing game this Saturday night against Ball State. Defensively, you want to see Auburn clamp down on the pass game of Ball State.
Tackle
Troy Robertson was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he is a quality quarterback. Auburn did a nice job against the run game of Baylor. It gave up, what, 438 yards, or excuse me, 419 yards in passing in that ball game. And as you mentioned, Bill, part of that was tackling and broken tackles in that game. By Baylor. And those are two things that you have to shore up as this schedule continues for Auburn, and it starts Saturday night with Ball State.
We'll talk more with Andy. Andy, stick with us for another segment, right?
Yes.
All right, we need to get to our first break. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, joined by the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, with us for a few more minutes. Auburn Ball State coming up this Saturday. Andy, Auburn came out of Saturday's game. Obviously, there's some bumps and bruises. Champ Anthony is the player that will definitely be out for a little while. Other than that, Damari Alston, I would say, questionable.
Yeah, I would agree with you there, Bill. I think that Anthony's probably out for a couple weeks. I think he was having surgery today on the broken thumb. And then the question is, how quickly can he come back? And is he wearing a cast or something like that for the Tigers? But it was good to see Amaris Williams come back into the ball game when he left.
Yes.
It didn't look real good, but he was able to come back, so I think he's okay there. I think we'll see more Jeremiah Cobb and Darrell Robinson and Omar Mapson II this Saturday. I don't know how much we see of Damari Alston this Saturday against Ball State with the dinged up shoulder. But otherwise, from what I can gather, and in talking with Coach Freeze last night on Tiger Talk, those were the two. Mm-hmm. Now, listen, losing Champ Anthony is a big one, and I feel bad for Champ because he goes out about this time a year ago with that broken leg, and the first game back he breaks a thumb, and so hopefully he's back and gets healthy and is going to be a very, very important part of this Auburn. He's one of Auburn's captains that they've lost probably for a couple of weeks at this point.
Yes, seeing how hard Champ worked to get back, yeah. And if you went to preseason practices, you know, like we were able to a couple of times, like you could see the extra work he was putting in, the thought that, you know, but it's football and that can happen, and hopefully he can, he can return. And in the meantime, I'm sure he's still going to stay involved with mental reps and everything. Damari, I imagine it's the same thing, where I don't know how much Damari Alston you should necessarily expect to see this week or, you know, for that matter, next week. I could see that, you know,
just get him healthy.
Not to overlook Auburn's opponents at home these next 2 weeks, but it might be a situation. Could be, look, if Damari Alston is 100% for Oklahoma and doesn't have to take hits these next 2 weeks, could be a blessing in disguise. Not just because it could make him fresher, but because it's going to mean reps for Darrell Robinson. And look, I think it's safe to predict a big Jeremiah Cobb game this Saturday. If you don't think you're going to see Damari, the Alston Martin, and I would also say, maybe some Omar could be on the menu.
Wasn't Omar working with the twos
yes,
today?
I think he was.
I think right. what a fun story that would be for the hometown product to make his debut.
I think it's safe to say that we'll see that Saturday. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a prediction. I think Omar gets his first snap for Auburn, at least at tailback.
Hey, there were some impressive performances, I thought, by some newcomers on Saturday. You mentioned the offensive line anchored by a pair of newcomers. Obviously, Eric Singleton drew a lot of interest. Horatio Fields with a big catch. Jackson Arnold, one of the SEC offensive players of the week. But over on defense, I mean, Eric Winters got a lot of snaps when Champ Anthony went down. Xavier Atkins, you couldn't help but notice him all over the field.
It's a career game for him. Career high 5 tackles.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
and a quarterback hurry at Baylor. So, absolutely, he was a big, big factor.
I mean, just so many. I thought Darian Smith didn't get a lot of snaps. But, boy, he's a guy that I think you're going to see playing more because of his ability to get into the backfield.
Well, when you play 8 snaps and you get very close to sacks on 2 of them, mm-hmm. right, you get to touch the quarterback. It's like Eric Winters, I think, touches the ball. Yeah. Twice in the second half, and near interceptions, and Smith touches the quarterback twice in 8 snaps, and that'll get you. Yeah, that could get you a few more than 8 in the next game.
Well, and you mentioned the interceptions or the near interceptions, Dan. That's something Auburn's got to continue to develop. Mm-hmm. While it was good that Auburn did not turn the ball over on Saturday, and one was overturned, I guess it was overturned is the right phrase now, and it was right. I mean, Frazier was down on the play, nearly a fumble on the play that Jackson was hit and threw it backwards. Great heads-up play by Jeremiah to get to that ball and cover it up. But I thought, for the most part, Auburn did a nice job of protecting the football. But we've got to see this defense come up. This defense has got to come up with some turnovers, you know. When Auburn was in last place in turnover margin last year, it wasn't just because the offense was turning it over and in at inopportune times. And it was that the defense wasn't providing a lot of turnovers either. And I think that's another area that Auburn has to continue to improve at in these next couple weeks.
Oh, no question about it. Before we get to what all is going on, some of the things going on this weekend, got to get your thoughts on the news yesterday about Banana Ball coming to Auburn. Don't know if you're going to be able to make it since you've got Arkansas with an early kick in Fayetteville.
He's starting in right field is what I read for the Banana Ball game.
But yeah, what fun that should be.
Well, and goodness, I mean, after it was announced, I was driving to Tiger Talk last night. And on the entire time, there was a family text that was, how can I get tickets? Well, we got to go. We got it. It was the whole time I was in the car. and it's not just them. I mean, everyone wants these tickets. And the general admission tickets, as I understand it, will go through the Savannah Bananas, mm-hmm. and their website.
Right.
The premium seating at Auburn, the 984 Club, the Broadway Club, the Hall of Fame Club, the 984 Club, I think I mentioned that twice now, that will be controlled by Auburn. So good luck getting tickets.
Yeah, no kidding.
That will be a sellout. It will be the second college to take advantage or to have the Banana Ball in, and it will be an all-star team of the Bananas and the teams that they play against Auburn. So that'll be very fun. I don't know if I'm going to make it back in time to see that or not, or even if I can get a ticket, for that matter, to see that game.
Well, good luck to all of us trying to find it. Yeah, no kidding. The ripest of the Bananas.
Should be a great atmosphere at Plainsman Park. It should be a very, very fun night, and hopefully it's just a completely fun day after a win at Arkansas and the Bananas to celebrate with that night.
Oh, absolutely. It should be a fun day this Saturday. I mean, with the home opener coming up Saturday evening, it's going to be a little warmer during the day, but, I mean, still, the weather we've had is something just to be thankful for at this time of year. Yeah. But with Ball State coming in, Auburn coming off the big win, I think it's going to be a pretty lively, festive crowd and a great atmosphere Saturday night.
This Saturday is a reunion game for Auburn. Mm-hmm. It is the Pat Dye reunion. And so all of those players, all of those coaches, all those folks that worked with, played for Coach Dye in one of the truly golden eras of not only Auburn football, but Auburn athletics, have been invited back. And I understand that they've had a great, great response. We are going to take advantage of that as well on our tailgate show Saturday, Tiger Tailgate Show presented by Konecka Sausage, which starts at 3:30 on Saturday on the east side, our stage on the east side of Jordan-Hare Stadium. Former Auburn linebackers and then defensive line coach Joe Witt Sr. will be joining us. Of course, he was with Coach Dye and others during his career as a coach at Auburn. We will have Ben Tamborello on the stage with us, outstanding All-American center for Auburn, and Quentin Riggins on stage with us. So All-American.
That's good. Good representation for Coach Dye.
We will have a great representation. Part of that crew, guys, also be a part of the Friday football luncheon in the old indoor facility behind the athletics complex. And Tim Jackson will be joining us, who was on that staff as well. Benji Rowland will be joining us on Friday at lunchtime. James Armstrong, Auburn soccer coach, and Auburn head football coach Hugh Freeze will be joining me on the stage at the Friday football luncheon Saturday. And I think the seating starts at 11, and we'll start the program at 11:30. So all of that coming up, and all of it coincides, of course, with Pat Dye Field built by Yellowwood. And folks will see the Yellowwood markings on the field for the first time on Saturday as well. I understand in talking with Rhett Hobart, who was involved in the negotiations with Yellowwood, Jimmy Rain kept saying, no, we need the Yellowwood sign to be smaller, because the main thing, in addition to the recognition of Yellowwood on the field, was that it's Pat Dye Field. That is also on the field. And he did not want the Yellowwood sign or the Yellowwood markings to overcome what Pat Dye Field and what that's about. So all of that, and it should be a fun weekend. No, I don't believe there's any rain.
No,
the forecast
look like
right
it.
Now, and it's going to be a warm one, but it's a night game, and all of the lasers and the lights and fireworks and all of that, and the brand new video board out of the north end zone as well.
Yeah, looking forward to all that, no question about it. Andy, before we let you go, I mean, update us on the Talking Tigers podcast.
Right now, it is about kickoff on the plains with Rhett Hobart, along with Daniel Watkins and Paris Buchanan, who they have nicknamed Pyro Paris. Mm-hmm. He's the one in charge of the fireworks. for Auburn football these days. That is the Talking Tigers podcast right now. Next week, I've been trying to promote this, the story of Mayo Sewell, former Auburn linebacker on that 2004 team that is now a pastor in a thriving church in Atlanta, spent time in prison after his career at Auburn, has certainly turned his life around, and recently spent a week with the homeless in Atlanta. And we talk a great deal about that coming up on the Talking Tigers podcast on Monday.
All right, Andy, I really appreciate it. Again, it's great to be able to spend a little time with you. Looking forward to seeing you over at the stadium on Saturday.
We'll see you all Saturday, guys. Have a great one. War Eagle!
Voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us as he does on Tuesdays. And
did a fantastic job Friday night, too. Auburn's put together on social media. You can get montages of, collections of Andy's best stuff, and it's great. Yeah, I mean, always meet in the moment, our guy Andy Burcham.
We will get to our bottom of the hour break. We're going to open up the phone lines, 334-321-1390. If you didn't get a chance to get through yesterday, I mean, a lot of folks were still grilling and at the lake and doing things like that yesterday while we were here on the air. But, I mean, we had a great time, but love to hear from you. Any thoughts on the entire weekend and, where we are and heading up into this weekend here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 21 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Tuesday afternoon. Our thanks to Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, for joining us as he does on Tuesdays. If you missed any of our time with Andy, you can check out the podcast.
Podcast The Drive, available wherever you get your favorite podcast. Go to ESPNAU.com or use the Podcast Center and or just go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. It's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Dan, did you make the viewing window today?
I went to the viewing window today. I bailed out before with player interviews, but I got to see...
So fill us in. What'd you see?
Yeah, I mean, it was...
I had physical therapy like 30 minutes in, so I knew I wasn't going to make it.
I marvel at the guys that can generate like a ton of content out of these viewing windows, because I don't know how much
Oh, you can give me everybody who lined up everywhere. I love seeing.
Sure,
that,
okay. But I think a lot of it.
But the main thing is who was participating, who were filling, who may have been filling in for the players that you were concerned about not playing.
Well,
this week.
And I guess that's where you would immediately go is without Champ Anthony and with Damari Alston taking it easy. Sort of what's different about those positions? I think the obvious candidate to get an increase in snaps with Champ Anthony unavailable seems to be Eric Winters, as far as a guy that you see getting more first team reps. I think Jacquez and Caleb Harris could both I think they could both certainly expect maybe even more snaps than they saw in the game on Friday. Although Caleb Harris played most of that game, New Boy would be another one. And then Blake Woodby.
Yeah,
seemingly is getting more insight, and I don't know how much this is like an exclusive deal.
Was it Woodby that was getting a look at nickel a little bit today?
And so I think they're looking at, and again, I wonder if the possibility exists of moving Sylvester Smith back and trying different players at nickel and having Sylvester play some of those snaps, because he played a lot of safety last season. Play some of those Champ Anthony snaps and then finding new roles for other nickels. But they also have safeties like Eric Winters that could step in and play that role instead. So, and the guy that I think it's unfair, honestly, I felt bad because he's out there a ton. KLF is another guy that is going to, like, I feel bad that I sort of leave him out of these discussions over the last couple of days, because he's going to get his fair share of snaps too. And they went to him early and often last year too, when they needed snaps in the secondary. So Kensley is somebody who seemingly is gonna have his role. I think he's someone who could stay. You know, who might be on the receiving end of more reps, more snaps, because you don't have Champ. Look, replacing Champ Anthony. A lot of snaps.
We talked about it yesterday about the lack of having that veteran leadership back there. He is, you know, he and Kay and Lee are the most veteran players Auburn has in the secondary, and it's different. An outside corner is not going to be the guy who's going to be setting the defense.
And what's crazy to say about that is that Champ is still, as a veteran guy, he was a first-year player last year and a first-year player to Division I college football. Right, like I mean,
was last year his first year?
Last year was year one for Champ. He had the redshirt year, but Champ's a redshirt sophomore, right? Did not play because he was a JUCO guy,
right? For some reason, I was thinking that he came.
No, Champ. Yeah, Champ was
Hughes' first year.
Yeah, no, I think no. Last year was Champ Anthony's first year was his first taste of action, and so it's like I keep thinking Caleb Harris. Feels like a natural. I know it's just a second year, right? Caleb Harris is a true sophomore, but Caleb seems like somebody who would be like a natural on the receiving end of more of his would be a guy who would step into. Who made the point yesterday? Was it Brian about Bug Thompson?
Yes.
Like I think.
Yeah, that was a great point.
Yeah, I think. I mean,
what because would, you had a guy who had played so much football and. Understood and was able to set and make sure everybody there in the back, you know, in the back seven, was where they should be.
If the plan going into the season was Champ Anthony taking over that role, clearly they're going to have to find a new plan over these next couple of weeks. I wonder who else, you know, that I would think. I mean, look, Jacquez has played a lot of college football.
Yeah, he has. People forget. I mean, he played some at Alabama before he went to Colorado and then transferred. Didn't play a lot last year at Auburn, but he's been around.
He's been around college football a long time. One would think Sylvester Smith is the kind of player who could eventually develop into that leader.
Yeah, but, it's interesting.
But he's played at the line of scrimmage a lot, right? He's there at the, you know, he's done some nickel work where it's.
And it sounded like, at least from what I saw from Nathan and. Mm-hmm. And Brian, and he was still at nickel today.
Yes, he was. He was not out there. Like, I mean, I think that they are willing to move him mid-game to safety. But I think they're working him at nickel mostly when they're – and I wonder how much of that is trying to look at other players at safety right now, feeling like compared to –
Well, and what other guys they are – what other players they're comfortable with at nickel who can cover better – than safeties.
Yes. And so I think that there's like it's a little. I think they're evaluating. Obviously, they're evaluating everyone there. But I think it's going to be. It there does not appear to be one player who's way out in front because you pulled Champ Anthony out and now it's suddenly his. I mean, Eric Winters would be the closest.
Eric will probably gain the most initially.
But you've still got KLF and you've still got New Boy. And you've still got options.
Yeah, said last night on Tiger Talk that New Boy is going to play a lot more.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of that is New Boy at safety and how much of that would be New Boy at the line of scrimmage and someone else moving back because he can do both
Very
of those
well
things.
Very well could be at nickel.
And he could be.
I think they're taking looks. That's what they're doing right now, it appears, is they want to see what other options they have there at nickel before they make any other moves.
Sure, and there's – I mean, look, and I think that even if Champ was healthy – they would still be making these evaluations based on the performance of the Auburn secondary
last week.
On Friday night. Mm-hmm. Now you have the added intrigue of Champ Anthony is injured, and you've got to figure out what to do in his absence for however long it is, and it sounds pretty serious. So, you know, I think that you...
Yeah, broken thumb. I mean, he's going to be out for a few weeks. And then, like Andy said, you wonder, is he going to come back with a cast there, a glove, you know? Is it going to be like a mitt? What kind of thing is it going to be? But it's something that's going to keep him out for a while. You wonder. I mean, I think it's very optimistic. Think he'll be back for the road trip.
And you're going to need, again, not to overlook these two teams you play at home, but you're going to need such strong play in your secondary. John Mateer is going to try to test you out. Texas A&M feels very good about that quarterback in year two, and then there's Georgia, right? So I mean, you're going to need to shore up things, and that's sort of. I mean, I do think that's where, especially now that you've crossed that, you know, the now that you've passed the test of that Baylor game, now the schedule sets up a little bit before you play that game at Oklahoma, because other teams have big time tests and you have a pair of seemingly comfortable home games.
Yeah. Yeah, it does, you know, it does set up pretty well. Sounded like everybody really felt Jackson Arnold looked sharp, yeah. Really sharp today throwing the ball.
Jackson Arnold looking sharp, and I think they want to – I mean, it's – again, I've thought he's had a pretty solid set.
I thought he looked good every time I've seen him.
Yeah, I mean, he really impressed me the first time I ever got to see him, which was the practice right before
before
the spring.
Spring game.
And then ever since then, I've thought, yes, he's had moments where Hugh Freeze has expected something different. But for the most part, I think the reason those moments stand out is because this is a guy who, and I thought on Friday night, made a lot of quick, correct decisions. Hugh Freeze, you know, had very little problem with Jackson Arnold's decision making on Friday night. I thought this was a guy who did a lot of what he needs to do as far as recognizing and processing and making the plays. And you see that in practice too when it comes to that Eric Singleton is, you know, he's shaking off whatever was bothering him during the preseason, looking good. I mean, the whole crop of receivers, hard not to be impressed when they're out there in practice. The other position where I would feel like there's intrigue is running back. Without mm-hmm. Damari, with Damari taking it easy, I think, like we said with Andy, this Saturday I would expect a big Jeremiah Cobb game. And also,
I just wonder how much you run it. How much I think they want to run it. I think they want to be fairly balanced, but I think they really want to try to get the passing game clicking
but
too.
Without Damari, I think that, you know, while you could,
oh, you think Jeremiah would be your feature back?
I think Jeremiah's got a feature back opportunity, and this is a Ball State run defense that, I mean, look, I think the plan was it could be similar to Friday, where if it's, I mean, the plan could be to throw it, but if they're going to stay in two, you know, if they're going to keep two safeties back the whole time because they don't want to get beaten deep, Jeremiah Cobb could have a big game.
You know how bad Ball State is.
I saw the Purdue stats, and it's
you know
it's
what
ugly.
You know what Purdue was last year.
I know, but it sounds a little bit like Spector's call yesterday. I know people want to see Auburn let her rip with the receivers.
Well, yeah, but you don't do that against a Baylor team.
Sure. But in,
you might be able to do that this week, and just you can force a couple.
But to me, if Ball State is willing to stay in, we dare you to run it, we're going to overplay the deep ball mode, then let Jeremiah Cobb have 15 yards and then have 15
but
yards.
Do you want to go to Oklahoma not having thrown more than 20 passes in a game and not knowing really how the passing game's going to click? I think you have to do that.
I wonder if it's a matter of Hugh Freeze taking what the defense gives him, and if they're going to keep taking it to the point where I don't know if he can stand. I know
to do it for three games.
Sure, but like he says, if it's getting you second and two, and if it's getting you 300 plus yards on the ground, it's something that you can. I don't know. Now here's my thing. They probably don't want to run Jackson nearly as much these next couple of weeks.
Oh no,
that's
no,
where
you
I
absolutely
would think.
Don't.
And if that means you need to need to tinker, and he needs to throw it more, and he needs to make quicker passes, you know, I could see that being an adjustment. But look, if Ball State lets Auburn run it at will,
well,
I think Auburn's going to run it at will.
Oh, I think so. But if Auburn throws 17 passes, then I will be absolutely stunned. All right, we need to get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390 here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back in. Final couple of minutes of hour number one here on this Tuesday Drive. Don't forget, coming up at 5:30 at the bottom of hour number two, Jake Crane of Crane & Company will join us. We'll get his thoughts on week one. Again, the both polls are out. We have a new number one. Auburn just shy of making the top 25. Alabama dropping all the way to 21. Are there 9 or 10 SEC teams in the top 25.
I'm still really curious about what Auburn. It's you know, carrying on the conversation we were just having. Like what's the approach this Saturday? How much does Auburn want to show? How much does Auburn want to practice in game? And how much does Ball State's defensive approach influence that? If Ball State takes the look, I'd be stunned if Ball State took the Baylor approach of we're gonna
no,
play.
I think Ball State's gonna have to try to play to stop Auburn's run.
Yeah, I think the next two teams that Auburn faces,
well, all depending. I mean, if Auburn throws for 500 yards against Ball State, then who knows what South's gonna
do. Then I think South Alabama will have different problems. But you're right. After what you saw Friday night, I would think that you're gonna see teams
much more straight up.
Dare Auburn to complete downfield passes as opposed to daring Auburn to run it up the middle successfully.
All right, we're halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive. Love your thoughts. Come on in and join us here in hour number two.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan Drew at the controls here on this Tuesday afternoon. We had Andy Burcham, as we usually do, voice of the Auburn Tigers, with us in hour number one. We'd love to hear from you. If we didn't get a chance to talk to you yesterday, had a good reaction yesterday on our Labor Day edition of the show following Auburn's win. Now we are through the weekend, and what an ugly one it was for North Carolina fans last night. My goodness, the Bill Belichick era. You think it's going to be an era? I don't know how. Maybe I don't know. I can't see this one going much more than a season or two.
I don't want to overreact. You know, Dion had some bad moments in year one, and it worked in year two. But it seems like it just that the, with Belichick. You would think that if it's going to work, you would see the results more immediately because it would involve, players coming to play for him and that maybe otherwise wouldn't consider North Carolina, and his, going back to the Charlie Weiss thing, the decided schematic advantage that you would think Bill Belichick teams had.
Very impressive scripted opening drive.
Yeah. And then what?
And that was it.
No,
and Sonny, then it was 48-7, and could have been more.
And
I mean, TCU could have scored again late.
And for all the and again, not to use that game to make any sort of broader point, but if you're using the NFL coaches had a full offseason and the college coaches had a full offseason, and you look and the Sonny Dykes team looked very, very sharp compared to the Bill Belichick team. So we'll see. But it's got to be a concerning start for folks invested in how the Bill Belichick thing goes. And you know what? You were hoping. It's like, okay, the games are going to start, so people will stop talking about him and the girlfriend, right? Like those conversations will mostly end. It's like, okay, well now they got now they got football to talk about. That football. Like you got that game to talk about instead. I mean, I imagine they're going to be like, all right, we'll get set her up with an interview or something, so people will stop talking about the TCU game.
Good luck with that. Yeah, good luck with that. So that wrapped up the weekend, and this afternoon we have the latest polls out, and I was right a little while ago. 10 SEC schools in the AP top 25. LSU leads the way at number 3. By the way, Ohio State did move the number one spot after knocking off Texas. Penn State stayed 2. LSU is 3rd. Ohio State had 55 first-place votes. Penn State 7, LSU 3. The other first-place vote in the AP poll goes to Oregon, who is number 6. After LSU at 3, Georgia is 4. Miami up from 10 to 5. Oregon is 6. Texas dropping from 1-7, Clemson dropping from 4-8, Notre Dame from 6-9, and South Carolina is your fourth SEC school in the top 10. They come in at number 10.
Yeah, Boise State and Kansas State were the two teams that dropped out from week one to week two. Kansas State falling from 17, Boise State falling from 25. Utah and Florida State, the teams that jump into the top 25. Auburn got close.
Yeah, Auburn's 27. Where's South Florida?
South Florida is...
I don't have the full list in front of me.
All right, so the others... Okay, so others receiving votes. BYU is...
26.
Yeah, they're 26. Auburn, Georgia Tech, USC, Louisville, TCU, Missouri, South Florida, Tulane. Your next crop.
Well, I would have thought South Florida might have jumped into the.
I tell you what, that's a decent crop of teams bubbling outside the top 20. BYU, Auburn, Georgia Tech, USC, Louisville, TCU, Missouri, South Florida, and Tulane. Any one of those teams could jump into the top 25 next week look like they belong.
Well, I'm telling you what, if South Florida gets a win this week, they'll jump into the top 25. You know who they've got?
They've got the Florida Gators.
They indeed have the Florida Gators.
Yeah, Florida. It's a tough schedule.
I mean,
11 really tough games. You know, all things considered.
Look at their next five games.
Yeah.
They got South Florida at home, 2 LSU, 2 Miami, Texas, 2 Texas A&M.
Yeah,
that is their next five games.
I mean, the next 11 they play are against.
They've got Georgia, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Florida State down the stretch.
This is the last non-Power 5 game that Florida plays this season. The next 10 are going to be either SEC games or games against Miami and Florida State out of conference. I think Florida is a team, and the schedule I think is a reason why. When folks said, "Is there a team in college football that could make a really strong case for the playoff at 9-3.
Oh, if Florida is 9-3 and they're not in, then either we have really way, way overestimated some of these other teams, or somebody's lost their mind and not putting them in the playoff.
I mean, we saw 9-3 teams knocking on the door last year. I don't know if any of them would have had to run a gauntlet like the one Florida seemingly has to run this season. And so, and that starts with after South Florida's really impressive win over Boise State on opening night last Thursday, now they've got the Florida Gators in what could be a huge game for both teams.
Yeah, Florida is 13. Florida State, by the way, 14.
Doesn't Florida have LSU next week too?
Yeah, they do. That's their next. Yeah. Well, they've got... Yeah, LSU and at Miami are the next two games. They have South Florida, then they go to Baton Rouge to Miami.
Yeah, brutal. I mean, it's probably.
So they have an unranked South Florida, and then their next two games they go to the numbers 3 and 5 teams.
Yeah, we were talking before the Auburn Baylor game that Baylor with Auburn, SMU, and Arizona State in their first four games. Baylor probably has one of the tougher first four games of any major conference team.
You think Florida would swap with them now?
In a heartbeat. I would put Florida with South Florida in Gainesville and then going to LSU and to Miami. I don't know if there's going to be a major conference team as battle-tested as Florida after the fourth game.
As battle-tested or as beaten down or beaten up. I mean, my goodness.
Yeah, well, you know who else would be in that conversation, Bill? You know who South Florida has next week, right? South Florida goes to Miami next week. So
these teams. So you've got Miami, Florida, and South Florida like playing a round robin.
So how about
over the next few weeks?
How about this? So by the time October 4th is over, Miami will have played Notre Dame, South Florida, and Florida at home. And they would have gone to Florida State and played Florida State as well. That's in the first five games of the season. So some of these teams in Florida are playing are playing really competitive games early in the season. And you know what? It could be a little bit like the 90s and the early 2000s, Bill, where all three of these teams from Florida and maybe South Florida too are making an argument that they should be in the top 10. Look, we could have three Florida teams in the top 10. again pretty pretty soon.
It's been a while.
Although the fact they're playing each other could complicate that a little hurts. Bit, but they're they've all got some winnable games on their schedule too.
Wow. So as we again look at the SEC teams that are ranked, mentioned Florida 13. Florida State's not an SEC team, but they're 14. Oklahoma is 18. Texas A&M 19. Ole Miss 20. Alabama dropping all the way, taking the biggest. I guess that's the biggest fall from 8 to 21.
Yeah, only 4 1-loss teams remain in the top 25. It's Alabama, Clemson, Texas, and Notre Dame.
Yeah, the other three are in the top 10. And then Tennessee is 22. So 10 of the top 22 teams in the country are SEC schools.
Right, and Alabama with Alabama's got ULM.
Yes.
This Saturday they host Wisconsin a week later, and then the trip to Athens. So you know Alabama's going to have some opportunities to show that they belong higher up in those polls. They also they got some things to fix after what we saw this weekend in Tallahassee.
All right, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it. And Jeremy is up first this hour. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, bud.
Yeah, hey guys. Rarely rooting for Pearl Harbor to happen, but if it could happen again to Alabama this weekend in Tuscaloosa, wouldn't be too upset about it.
If they were to lose to Louisiana Monroe, the collection plates would be being passed for that $70 million, I'm telling you.
No, had a great trip. Waco was awesome. Like, the people that went out there, like Dan said, everywhere you turned, there was just orange and blue all around. The Missouri people, even in the stadium up in the concourse, and which I will say, their stadium going through the concourse, you can actually see the game. Like, that's a new stadium, and it showed. Like, fantastic place to watch a football game. You can get nachos and hot dogs and not miss a thing. So, That was great, but some of the Missouri fans compared it to when BYU was there a few years ago. Apparently, BYU kind of Mormoned out the place and really, really filled it up. And they were all very complimentary of the fact.
What'd you think of what you saw on the field from Auburn against Baylor?
You have to be nitpicky. I mean, alignment problems on punts. Like, I know it's the first game, but it happened one time. It shouldn't happen a second time. I wonder, on that point,
because we haven't talked too much about the penalties on the procedure penalties on Auburn punts in the Baylor game. We'd be talking about a lot more if Baylor had won. I'm sure those. But you know what? In those situations, I wonder if Auburn had anything tricky lined up, or had anything or if it was just a mental mistake by a player who lined up where he wasn't supposed to, but you're right. That's got to be ironed out over these next couple of weeks.
Like I said, that's being kind of picky in a game where you win. Look, we got some breaks. We get on that fumble of Jackson Arnold right before the half.
That would have hurt bad had Cobb not followed.
It's an entirely different ball game. But that was going to be my question. When was the last time since Hugh Freeze has been here that y'all can remember that we scored to close out a half and or scored to open a half? Because we got the ball with 3 minutes to go, had a chance to close out the half, even if it's with a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
And we just looked like we did not know what we wanted to do with the ball. And then
the clock just continually runs and runs. I feel like, you can use some of that. You don't have to waste every second.
Well, you don't have to. Like, there's 3.5 minutes. And look, these teams can get up and down the field in a hurry.
Right.
And I realize you don't want to leave any time.
No.
But we showed no sense of urgency to get down the field and then slow down. And, I don't know. Like, that has been a problem since Hugh has been here. When was the last time we scored to end a half and or scored to start a half?
You would think that you would think that with Hugh Freeze's offensive philosophies that he would be a really potent 2 minute drill kind of coach, right? With his desire to go fast, go downfield. But you're right. That has not been a strength of Auburn in his tenure.
I thought there was a couple of times, and then later on in the game, the first field goal that we settled for, you know, it was third and 7 or 8, and we run that little bootleg and throw it into the flats to the tight end. It was almost like he didn't trust Jackson to just drop back and take a shot into the end zone. Like, it's 3rd and 8, it's 3rd and goal at the 7 or 8 yard line, and you threw the little flat. They tackled him at like the 4, and we kicked the field goal.
I wonder if they thought that's the Frazier dump off. I wonder if they thought they were going to get to the goal line with it, and then maybe the decision is a little bit easier to go for it. But you're right. That's one where you know you would think that Auburn's got some red zone targets.
You got some guys that are bigger than their defense.
And that's kind of a designed. Yeah, I mean that play's almost designed to go to Frazier there.
You know, you go to, like, to Baylor's 4th down play that they scored on in that same end zone. Like, they had no hesitancy. They know exactly what they wanted to do on that play with that kind of same yardage, and theirs was a 4th down. You know, so I know they have to throw it in the end zone, but, like, it was just pitch and catch. They knew exactly the concept that they wanted. They did exactly what they wanted to do and scored.
I like Spavital. It wasn't a flawless performance by the Baylor offense either, but they were holding on for dear life in that second half, knowing that if they gave the ball back to Auburn down 14, it was probably
and they didn't want to waste any time trying to run it either.
And they didn't want to waste time, but I love sort of the ways he can open a defense up, the sort of the different looks you get. I loved couple of his 4th down calls. Like I thought Spavital did the strength, you know, if you're looking at strengths of that Baylor team after week 1, I like quarterback, I like some of their options to catch the ball, and I think they got a mad scientist calling plays.
I do wonder if they would have changed their mind and settled for a couple of field goal attempts knowing the way the game was going to turn out.
Let me ask you, they
went for what, 6 4th downs?
Yeah, they did. They did, as a matter of fact. What has the field goal just become, let's don't even worry about that? Across college football, there are more and more, it looks like, fairly gimme field goals where teams are going for it, and it's not all 4th and short or anything. I mean, they're going for it on 4th and 5 and 6 and 8, where you can kick a field goal. I guess I'm too old school because I like getting points.
But inside the 5, I understand the argument.
I understand that, but I mean, you're seeing it all over the field now.
Because you're pinning a team deep inside the 5, too, if you don't get it. Like, I understand the appeal of 6 versus 3, but you're right. If it's 6-0 and Baylor's kicking off early in that game, and they're kicking deep, maybe it plays out a little different in the first half.
Yeah, like I said, they had several opportunities on 4th down to, like, just don't go for it, just kick a field goal, even punt. You know, it was a really well game. It was entertaining. My little guys for their first road trip had a blast. So
cool.
We enjoyed it.
That's great. Yeah, it's a lot more enjoyable when you get a win like that.
It's a lot more enjoyable when you win.
Man, and the ability to, you know, when Baylor cut it 7, we talked about it yesterday, when Baylor would cut it to 7 for Auburn to be able to answer, that's something that they hadn't done the last couple of years.
Sure. Yep. You thought midway through the third quarter there that it was turning into a Big 12 game where it was just – offenses up and down the field, neither team, you know, whether it's the heat, because look, it was hot. I don't care what anybody says. It got dark. It was hot. It was muggy. just sitting there cheering. It was hot. It was muggy.
Tell you what, I thought their fans got tired too. And it makes sense, because
when you're fighting and you're battling uphill and can't ever get there, get even, wears you out.
No. Think about this, Bill. It was a blackout. And those fans had tailgated for hours in that climate, in that weather, and then gone to the game. And by the second half, there were times when they're trying to, hey, it's a really important down for this defense, and Auburn's got the ball, you know, let me hear you. And it's, you know, you're getting...
ain't much left.
Fumes. Well, yeah, they're running on fumes.
Don't underestimate the fact, like, it rained most of the morning and early afternoon there and didn't just drizzle. Like, it rained. Mm-hmm. And the sun came out, and it was nice for the game. But, man, it was hot and it was muggy. And it's, you know, that Texas heat, it is a thing, and it absolutely drains you. So.
Yeah, Baylor needed to have like a separate – they needed to have a bunch of students that they were keeping in air conditioning that they could go to, like a reserve student section that they could bring out for the second half or something. Because, yeah, those kids were cooked, you know, pretty early on. And you know, and I think the pleasant kick return was really the moment where their balloon burst, right? Because there was a lot of energy after that after the fourth down touchdown for Baylor, and it's, you know, how does the defense respond? Can they force Auburn into a mistake and make this a game again? And when Pleasant just, you know, when he green lights it to the end zone, it's
although I was a little concerned that the defense is having to go right back on the field.
Yeah.
Impressed with the defense. They held up, made plays late in the game, knowing that they were gassed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But they made enough plays late in the game and stiffened their back. It was a good win.
I'm actually looking forward to seeing how the defense plays here over the next couple of weeks after that, because DJ Durkin was not thrilled. I think that's the most passing yards he's ever had a defense allow. So I would think that he'll have their ears here the next couple of weeks.
We always worry about the offense. The defense is still giving up too many yards on third and longs. Mm-hmm. Even if they don't give up the first down, it feels like the other team
third and 16
to
turn into a fourth and one. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like I don't know how you cut the ball off in the middle of the field, but we've got to figure that out. Mm-hmm. Like, that was just, those little skinny posts were way too easy for them.
Oh yeah.
All right.
Great stuff, Jeremy. Thanks, man. Glad you had a good trip.
See you, bud.
All right, we'll get to our first break this hour. Don't forget, Jake Crane of Crane & Company joining us in about 10 minutes here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive, 106.7, and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls. Again, love for you to join him. Got a few minutes before we get to our bottom of the hour break. Then Jake Crane of Crane & Company will join us. Get his thoughts on the weekend. All right, now that we've seen weekend one, obviously we talked about North Carolina. We talked yesterday about that Texas-Ohio State game. Dan, the games that really caught your eye, maybe the biggest surprises, or maybe a team that appeared to be better than you thought, a team that really let you down as far as what you thought. Alabama's got to be in there when you're looking at teams that disappointed.
Sure, I mean, sort of absent, like, I mean, it would be very easy to put Florida State and Alabama into those different categories. I thought Tennessee was extremely sharp and
I was really impressed with Joey Aguilar throws a nice deep ball, didn't he?
That Tennessee Georgia game in a couple of weeks. Is that next Saturday? The fact that you get a Tennessee Georgia. How about Florida LSU and Tennessee?
They're on a ton of huge games this week. There's some couple of pretty big ones next week. We got Oklahoma Michigan this week.
Oklahoma Michigan's probably your biggest SEC game and one of your biggest games overall. This week there are a couple of conference games, right? Maybe just the one with Ole Miss and Kentucky.
That
might be the only SEC game this week. But the only SEC game where both teams are in the top 25 this week is the Michigan Oklahoma game. And we were talking about South Florida, Florida a little bit earlier on. But no, it's a quieter week as far as marquee matchups. But then a week later, things gear up in a serious, you know, in a huge way in week three, including, like we were just saying, you've also got A&M Notre Dame next Saturday.
Florida LSU.
That's right. So Florida LSU, Georgia Tennessee, Notre Dame, and Texas A&M playing in just a week, part of the week three lineup. But no, I think Michigan Oklahoma is a huge
A&M Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's part of the Big Week Three lineup. Michigan-Oklahoma is a huge game.
It really is.
For both of those teams.
It really is. Oklahoma's a pretty solid favorite in that ball game.
And how don't you want to see, I mean, you talk about a true freshman with some serious hype attached. When Michigan clears the way, and some of the stories about the recruitment of Bryce Underwood, like this is a this is a really special prospect. It's a big opportunity for him, and you're
tough
right.
Off on the road,
yeah. But I think that's going to be a. And by the way, that's an extremely hot ticket using ESPN's Vivid Seats. I think the get in price is somewhere in the neighborhood of $150.
Wow,
right now, and that's
little bit higher than Alabama, Louisiana, Monroe. You were showing me.
Yeah, how about that for the home opener?
Get in price of $11.
Yeah, $11. Your get in price for the Alabama,
look,
Monroe.
Kalen DeBoer is unbeaten at home though.
Yeah. He's
not unbeaten at home after this week.
This week is sort of it's too catastrophic to even get into, you know, what a loss would do this Saturday. But he's got a couple of games, you know, that Wisconsin game next week. You've got that game in Athens. You talk about somebody who never loses at home. Kirby Smart in Athens, Georgia.
That's right.
You're going there.
And then Diego Pavia comes into town.
You've got Diego Pavia. And then we've pointed out that Missouri game is really scary because you look and Missouri's got nothing but home games and a bye week before they play Alabama. Alabama's got Georgia and Vanderbilt back-to-back before they go to Columbia, Missouri. That's a trap for an Alabama team that's got
Tennessee and South Carolina the next 2 weeks.
And they've got Tennessee and South Carolina a couple of weeks later, and then a bye week before LSU comes to town. So this is a minefield.
That's why that was a huge loss for Alabama in week one, if this team has hopes of making the playoffs.
And I would point out that a 9-3 Alabama team didn't make last year's playoffs, so you wonder what they need to do the rest of the way to feel really good about their chances. But no, I think even if Alabama had looked good in Saturday's loss, you would still say, boy, there are some...
It's an uphill battle.
There are some really tough games and really tough times on this schedule. And now based on what they need to fix... This is a really important week for them. You would think staying healthy, you know, with the guys that they're counting on. Like, how many more of these guys can they lose in the ULM game before they play Wisconsin and then Georgia? This is a really important even though it's ULM, it's a really important week for Alabama.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll check in with Jake Crane on the other side. So stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio and Drew at the controls. And we're going to get to the drive hotline and welcome in our regular Tuesday afternoon guest from Crane and Company. That is Jake Crane. Jake, how you doing, man?
Man, feeling 1-0, doing well. What a great week one of college football, and excited to we don't have football on tonight, so you give us 5 straight days of it and then take it away. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to watch tonight when my daughter goes to sleep.
I was at physical therapy this morning, and that was the first question. And it's like, well, are you glad that you get a break from football? I said, are you serious?
No.
Man, come on, give me another game every night for the rest of the week. I mean, sure, no, I love it.
We're clearly sickos, Jake, and we need more and more and more of it. And I'm just so glad we had a caller mention this yesterday. One of the best things is after the silly season, in the summertime and some of the storylines that can take on lives of their own, it's so fun to have some real football so you can throw a lot of those in the garbage and overreact to what you saw this weekend instead.
Yeah, and stop worrying about 3 play callers, 3 quarterbacks,
golf,
and too much golf. Yeah, let's talk about what we saw on the field. So great.
What a plot twist. Aranda played too much golf.
Yeah.
Among others, this weekend.
Maybe somebody else in the state did something a little too much. My goodness, that was, I mean, that's probably, we were talking about it a few minutes ago. There's nobody that was a bigger disappointment, I don't think, this past week than Alabama.
No, and look, it wasn't just that you got beat. It's how you got beat.
Yeah.
And it's not just, you know, how you got beat up at the line of scrimmage, which shocked me. But what shocked me the most is the lack of effort and pride and how far the culture has fallen so fast at Alabama. I mean, when you turn on the tape, it's disgusting to watch, to be honest. Just as somebody, you know, who loves football, who played it, who coached it, the standard at Alabama has just fallen off a cliff. And then your guys, your D-line's laughing as Florida State's kneeing it out, and you're doing TikTok dances after the game. It seems like a terminal illness to me that's going on up there.
Well, yeah, as you said, I mean, it wasn't one of those a fluke here. Their quarterback completed 90% of his passes. It was the first time Alabama's lost a game without a turnover since 2016. I mean, it was not a fluke. Florida State was the better team.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, you're just not very good. Am I the only one, and I wonder if any callers said this before me, you know who Ty Simpson looked just like in that game
at quarterback? Are you going to say Peyton Thorne?
100%.
Yeah.
We heard that yesterday, Jake.
I said it. Hey, Jake, that's a Dan Peck right there. I told somebody that on Saturday at the airport.
He looked just like, it's insane, like running out of clean pockets, looking panicked, looking sped up. You know, can run the ball decently well. Mm-hmm. It looked like a carbon copy of what Auburn fans have been through the past 2 years.
And, Kalen DeBoer at Media Days, we talked about this after he gave me this answer, Jake, you and I did, when Kalen DeBoer said, you know, he thought about going in the portal, but he thought he had a quarterback in Ty Simpson who was as good as any quarterback that went in the portal this offseason, just didn't have the experience of those guys. Thought it was a curious answer at the time, and through 1 week, you had a quarterback at Florida State who pointed to center field with his bat and said, "I'm taking y'all deep," and you had a quarterback at Alabama who couldn't seem to make contact.
And I do want to say it wasn't just Ty. That was a team loss. That's probably what makes it. If it was one guy and you had to make one change, that's one thing. But it's a systemic problem. Mm-hmm. What happened to Alabama on the line of scrimmage last weekend was a borderline war crime. That's how bad it was.
Yeah, from especially a team that, you know, was getting raves as maybe being the best up front of any team in college football.
I mean, me too. I fell for the trap too. People I trust that are there, that are on that staff, felt really, really good about it. And you look at the guys that they have, and you should be good. That's what I'm saying. To me, this is a coaching and effort and discipline and culture problem, and that is not something you change overnight. It's like losing weight. If you want to lose 40 pounds, you're not going to lose 40 pounds in a day. You want to try and lose a couple pounds in a day, and that takes time. And that's what's forged during winter workouts and spring practice and summer workouts and all that. And by the time you get to fall camp, it's already got to be instilled. And Bama looks like a West Coast finesse team full of guys that are just worried about themselves. And in this sport, that's a death sentence.
Yeah, it reminds me of, I mean, we've seen a couple of hires where it's like, this guy came in and it's worked previously, but he's the wrong guy with the wrong plan at the wrong place. That's what you could say about Bielema. Bielema at Arkansas, and I think you could probably say that about Brian Harsin at Auburn. And I think Alabama, you know, it's early, and there's time to turn it around.
It's early, but they're 5-5 in their last 10 games. Mm.
Yeah, well, it's like Alabama went from a Western saloon to a hippie coffee shop in the village, like, overnight. It's just crazy.
Yeah, and you got some regulars who went to that saloon that want their cowboy bar back pretty soon,
yeah,
Jake. Cause it's,
yeah, they want somebody bursting in with a mustache and a pistol.
Walking
in with a matcha latte and a sign.
And it, you know, and for all the talk, and yes, Alabama is maybe the story of week one, or at least one of them, in college football. That wouldn't have been possible, in my view, without Gus Malzahn. What you saw on Saturday doesn't happen if Gus Malzahn yet again because he's done it over and over again in his college football career. Shown up at a place that had a nightmarish season the year before, and he says, crumple it in the garbage, we're rolling, and it's a brand new day. Think about the 09 Auburn Tigers. Think about the 2013 Auburn Tigers. Even the Arkansas team. In 06, that also beat Alabama. Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, when he walked out with McFadden.
It's what he does. Kane Womack was on that team, by the way. Fun fact.
And it's not like he reinvented the wheel. He beat him with Jet
Motion.
It's not like this was some sort of, he hit him with a reverse a couple times, but that was nothing but Jet Motion with action off of that, and Alabama just couldn't defend it.
Jake, Kane Womack played for Gus Malzahn in 2006 at Arkansas. The defensive coordinator for Alabama was a Gus Malzahn fullback. If anyone is seemingly in position to prepare his team for that, and it looked like something that was
they had never seen, like there was brand new. It's like go back and look at look at Gus's entire career at Auburn. It's like that. There's nothing new.
No, and I mean again, like when you look at just how the game. And it was funny because my thing was, look, Florida State, I got to see how they bounce back from adversity because that's what's going to tell you with the transfer portal guys because it cost them last year when they struggled. It went off a cliff. Man, when Bama got hit in the mouth after that first drive, they're the ones who didn't respond.
Oh, you're right.
So when it comes to Bama and I picked them to do well, I'm sociopathic. I can't feel bad for them. Like, I feel nothing.
Well, on the other side, over here on this side of the state, lot different. I mean, there's some people that want to complain that Auburn didn't throw the ball around and get the ball to its receivers. But my goodness, I mean, with Baylor apparently scared to death of Auburn's receivers, Auburn was glad to take 7 yards of pop on the ground.
Yeah, if you're complaining that Auburn didn't throw it more, then I hope you never call plays for Auburn. Because I think
the odds are they won't.
Yeah. I hope they never let you call a play. I think the only person that was more shocked than me that Baylor played not only two high safeties, but they were flat-footed. It wasn't like we're reacting and coming downhill late. It was we're scared to death of you beating us deep, so we're going to play with light and even boxes. And I think the only person that was more shocked than me was Hugh Freeze.
Yeah.
I legitimately think. Because, I mean, we did a live stream of the game, and I'm sitting there after Auburn scored on that first drive, and we're looking at each other like, all right, well, now you're going to get Dave Aranda out of too high. And they just never got out of it. And then you think at halftime, all right, the adjustment for Baylor is get out of too high, this, that, and the other. And they never got out of it. Guys, they didn't get out of it in the red zone. They had safeties with their heels on the goal line when Auburn's at the 15 and at the 12. It was just, and I don't want to take away anything from Auburn. I was so happy that for what feels like the first time in a long time, Auburn took what the defense gave them.
Right.
They took what the defense gave them. They played smart, and it worked, and they called the plays to win the game, not to check a box on, oh, well, we need to throw it this many times and run it. It was just very surprising to see that, because if I'm playing Auburn, even with our receivers, Jackson Arnold, you're going to have to throw it to beat me. Mm. And they did the exact opposite.
I think you're absolutely right. Like, especially the lack of an adjustment. I wonder what we'll see from teams that play Auburn the next couple of weeks. The thought that, eventually.
They won't be in too high the whole game. I can promise you that.
Yeah, it's like, okay, they're going to start trying to dare Jackson to complete some passes here, right? And it's like, no, they're not. They're going to. And to Baylor's credit, there are probably some Auburn games in the last 2 years where if Hugh Freeze resists the devil's candy, if he can prevent himself from taking the bait and he commits to that run game, Auburn might have had more success. But he didn't take the bait against Baylor. He said, if you're going to let this offense have this, these kind of run lanes, we're just going to make it second and two every single time.
Yeah, and it was base stuff. Like, what Auburn ran, because they didn't have to get tricky, it was a lot of inside zone RPO. It was quarterback design run with power read off the jet motion with Singleton, and they just kept going back to the well. It's like they say, like about McDonald's, if you're good at making burgers, make burgers. And that's what Auburn did. And that, to me, shows a maturity on the coaching staff. I actually thought that the offense called a very mature game, and I thought DJ Durkin called a very immature game on the defensive side and didn't adjust when he realized Baylor was cooking us in man.
Talking with Jake Crane of Crane & Company here on the Tuesday Drive. Before we run out of time while we're just talking about these two ball games from this past week, Jake, were there any other what were the other impressions, the big impressions you got coming out of week one?
Well, LSU and Miami, pretty good on defense.
That's scary to think how good
sure.
LSU could be if they're good on defense.
Well, here's the scariest part, is that LSU is, they pretty much always had the guys that can do it.
Always.
But that was a LSU defense that was flying around, not making mental mistakes, and they were playing aggressive, but they weren't playing emotional. And to me, that is the scariest part. How many times did LSU bust a coverage? They didn't bust one. Not one. What had been killing them in the years before? They would just let guys loose.
Mm-hmm.
Some guy would just go try and make a play on his own. People were in their gap. They were leveraging the right way. They took good angles. They didn't hit anybody late. It was so organized and violent, and that's what you want the defense to be, and I think Miami's the same way.
Wow, it is just one weekend, but I mean, there are some strong impressions out there this week. What you got?
Well, Dan? I'm going to say before we move on too much, because I thought it was really interesting what Jake said about the game DJ Durkin called, and I wanted to just sort of follow up briefly there. What do you think changes for the Auburn defense over these next couple of weeks as they get? You have these two. These two home games that seem, like they should be fairly comfortable for Auburn. Then you've got that Oklahoma game in Norman in a couple of weeks against a quarterback that looks like he's going to test you just as much as Sawyer Robertson did.
Well, look, DJ Durkin's a brilliant football mind. I know he knows what he's doing, but I think he kind of did what we saw Auburn do offensively last year, where something wasn't working and you're still trying to do it, or you make an adjustment and something works, and then you go back to what wasn't working. What I'm worried about is Auburn's going to go out there, because I thought the D-line played pretty well.
Yeah, they did.
I thought the D-line did a really good job collapsing the pocket, shutting down the run. Auburn, the fact that Michael Trigg got inside of us defensively so many times, and we didn't leverage the ball right so many times. The tackling stuff, look, first game, guys are going in there with their head over their feet. They're a little bit out of control. You're all amped up. I can understand that. That's something these guys are athletic enough to fix, and they will fix. I just don't know how good we are from a personnel standpoint to run that much man. Like, it got to the point where it's like, dude, how many times are you going to get beat the same way with the same coverage? How many times are you going to keep bringing these pressures and the pressures not get there? What's crazy is I thought Auburn was more effective rushing four than they were when they brought pressure, and then you're skinny in the back end and guys are just running right by you. But what scares me is we're going to play Ball State and our guys can man them up and lock them up. We're going to play South Alabama and our guys can man them up and lock them up. Then we're going to think we're this great man coverage team now and we fixed everything, and you go out to Oklahoma and get your pants pulled down in man coverage. So if I was DJ Durkin, I would have to, and Coach Freeze and them, and I know they are, you look at the film and you got to ask yourself the honest question. Yes, this is who you are as a defensive coordinator philosophically, but does that fit what our guys are best at? There would be a whole lot more zone coverage being run in the next 2 weeks to get used to it. That doesn't mean you never run, man. You got to run multiple things. You can't live in a world of absolutes. But I tell you what, when it comes down to it, I don't know if we can cover guys in man. I just don't know if we can.
Yeah, that's a great point. Great point, Jake. And that Oklahoma team's got a pretty interesting matchup. John Mateer will be hosting Bryce Underwood in Michigan.
That's the game of the weekend for me, Jake.
Oh, wait, without a doubt, unless just something crazy happens that nobody's foreseeing. But it's so interesting to see a young quarterback go on the road in an environment and watch how the OC calls it, kind of like watching Arch go to Ohio State. I thought Sark was very conservative from a play-calling standpoint, just to try and not overload him. And then on the Oklahoma side, are they going to be able to run the ball? They struggled to run the ball a little bit against Illinois State. some of that was they were very vanilla in their play calling. They didn't show a lot. I mean, Mateer threw for 400 yards, so it wasn't like it was awful offensively. But I'm interested to see not only if Oklahoma can run the ball well, but how much quarterback design run to truly get a hat on the hat in the box with a Michigan front seven that's pretty good that you're going to see. I think it's a low-scoring game that Oklahoma wins, but this is going to be a really good litmus test for both of these teams going forward to see what they're about as we get closer to conference play.
Yeah, no question. Great stuff as always. Jake, let everybody know what you got coming up on Crane & Company.
Yeah, man, we actually did our power rankings today. Auburn gets a mention in there if you haven't seen it already. You know, obviously talking about what happened with Alabama. So, yeah, go to YouTube. It's Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N and Company. And, yeah, man, it feels good to be 1-0, but you got to wipe it just like a loss. You got to move on. It's not about Ball State. It's about Auburn. And I think the team's going to do that. And just excited to see this flower blossom.
All right, Jake. Thanks again, man. Have a great week.
See you, bud.
All right. Y'all be good.
Right back to wrap things up here on the Tuesday Drive.
Opening August 20th.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Winding things down here on the Tuesday Drive. Fun show again. Our thanks to Jake Crane of Crane & Company joining us this hour. Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, with us in hour number one. Again, if you missed any of it, check out the podcast.
Podcast of the Drive, available wherever you get your favorite podcast. Go to ESPNAU.com or search for The Drive with Bill Cameron wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Tomorrow, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover will join us here in the studio when we get underway. Hope you'll join us as well. But that's going to wrap things up for the Tuesday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.